Welcome to Open Your Eyes, a podcast about empowering each of us with the perspective and tools to grow and change. Thanks for joining us. I hope you're having a great day. Our mission here at Open Your Eyes is to help us all open our eyes a bit more to the possibilities and realities all around us. And each week, we try to bring messages that will help you in real and practical ways to live a happier life. So today, wherever you are as you listen to this podcast, I hope you get a new perspective of how you can think and live better. And if this podcast inspires you a bit, please share it with a friend. It just may be what they need in their life today. Let's get started. Today, I'd like to talk about where your energy goes. The Boston Marathon, held annually on Patriots Day, is one of the oldest and most prestigious marathons in the world. In 2013, about 23,000 runners participated in the race, with tens of thousands of spectators lining the streets from Hoppington to Copley Square. The finish line on Boylston Street, near the Boston Public Library, had a particularly large and festive crowd that day. The mood was jubilant. Families, friends, and tourists cheered as runners completed the 26.2-mile course under clear skies and mild temperatures. Adrian Haslett, then 32 years old, was among those spectators. A professional ballroom dancer and instructor, she had gone to the marathon with her boyfriend, Air Force Captain Adam Davis, to cheer on the runners and enjoy the celebration. They were walking along the busy sidewalk when they made the spontaneous decision to stop and stand near the finish line, outside the Forum restaurant, one of the most crowded spots along the route. Unbeknownst to them, two radical extremists planted two pressure cooker bombs in the crowd, one just a few feet from Adrian. At 2:49 p.m., the first explosion tore through the crowd near Marathon Sports, sending a shockwave of fire and glass and shrapnel across Boylston Street. When this happened, Adrian hunched over and covered her head, not knowing what the explosion was. 12 seconds later, the second bomb exploded directly in front of the Forum restaurant, just feet from Adrian Haslett. The blast instantly shattered windows, blew apart metal railings, and threw people to the ground. Adrian's lower left leg was nearly severed by the explosion. She later recalled the deafening noise, the smell of gunpowder, and the overwhelming confusion. "I remember being on the ground," she said, "my ears ringing and looking down and realizing my foot was gone. I didn't feel pain, yet just shock." Adam Davis, though injured himself, used his belt as a tourniquet to stop Adrian's bleeding before emergency responders arrived. First responders and volunteers flooded the scene within seconds, tearing down barriers to reach victims. Adrian was rushed to Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, where doctors performed emergency surgery and later amputated her left leg below the knee. What people don't realize is after an amputation, you don't just pop on a prosthetic and go, she said. Your leg is angry. You have all these nerves and muscles and bones that were just cut. You put pressure on them and there's pain. And then a little more pressure, and then a little bit more. And it takes months to learn how to walk again. Well, after the bombing, Adrian became one of the most powerful symbols of resilience. She spent weeks in recovery, not only healing physically, but coping with trauma and fear. She later said the hardest part wasn't losing her leg, it was losing her sense of safety. Well, determined to dance again, Adrian focused on the future. She partnered with Hugh Hare, an MIT professor and double amputee who designs advanced prosthetics. Hare's team created a specialized bionic prosthetic leg engineered for ballroom dancing, allowing her to move with precision and rhythm. Less than a year later, in April of 2014, Adrian took the stage at a TED conference and danced publicly. In 2016, she ran the Boston Marathon to honor those who couldn't. The race took her 10 hours, and she had to stop and walk many times. It was grueling and difficult to endure, but she did it. In 2019, she was hit by a car while running and training. In 2020, the pandemic happened. In 2021, she rolled her ankle in training. But in 2023, with a training partner, a professional marathoner, my friend, Shalane Flanagan, Adrian ran the Boston Marathon and finished third in her category in half the time of her 2016 marathon. There are 26 miles in a marathon, she said, and 26 letters in the alphabet. Yet there's no pre-described arrangement of those 26 letters. We get to choose how those letters are arranged, what they spell and say about us, and how we will write our story. Now, here's the thing. We may not lose a leg like Adrian, but most of us lose from time to time. We lose our motivation, a job, a friend, a dream, or even part of us. But if you listen to Adrian, she wasted very little energy on her loss, but rather focused her energy on the future. She returned to dance, even though it was never going to be the same. She ran a marathon, even though she was never going to set a record. She put her energy into doing what helped her feel strong again. And she started to use the 26 letters in the alphabet to spell things about herself for the future. Her energy went to making the most of what she had. So what about you? Each day, where does your energy go? Is your energy focused on others, on the future? Or is your energy consumed by the past or by those who have done you harm? Is it focused on the why not excuses that we all consider from time to time? Well, as C.S. Lewis said, there are far better things ahead than any we leave behind. Recently, my adult daughter has endured some extremely trying times and losses. Her life has been turned upside down. We've had many talks in which I've tried to encourage her. I've told her a dozen times what I have learned the hard way in life, that you can spend your time replaying in your mind what someone else did or didn't do to hurt you. You can worry about the past. You can be bitter because there doesn't seem to be justice. Or you can set aside any injustice. Don't give the people who hurt you a second thought. Put your energy to your future and be focused on being a kind and caring person. If you will do this, you'll find joy and happiness much faster. Give the injustice to God. He will take care of things and give yourself a future filled with good things. Well, she's taken this advice. It's hard at times, but I've seen her find happiness by putting her energy in the future and toward her children. Where does your energy go? Well, many of you listening to this podcast drive an electric car. I'll bet you have focused on the energy required to charge your car and the things you can do to preserve energy while you drive the car. You've noticed that if you drive moderately, you use less energy. If you have your settings configured to let the car's transmission, rather than brakes, slow the car, you increase energy and a host of other things. But it's likely you're paying attention to how much energy goes into your car and how you spend that energy, especially on a long trip. Your personal life energy is no different. Many of us don't pay attention to how much mental and emotional fuel we put inside ourselves or how we spend that energy. But if we did, we'd soon realize that we waste energy on things that are of little importance to us. So, if your energy has been misplaced of late, how do you redirect your energy to the right places in life? Well, the first is to use habits to help. If you've read the book Atomic Habits, then you'll know what I'm about to say. But if you haven't, I can save you the trouble and will tell you the key elements from the book right here. These can help you put your energy in the right direction. This is a great book written by James Clear. One premise from the book is to habit stack. And after reading the book, I started doing this in my life, and it works. He says, take a habit you already do every day and pair it with a new one you want to implement. In other words, stack one habit on top of the other. That way, you're building on something that's already a part of your daily routine instead of trying to create an entirely new daily routine. This means it takes less energy to implement a new habit. For example, you likely have everyday habits like getting out of bed, showering, brushing your teeth, getting dressed, driving to work. Now, think about what you can stack on top of these habits. For example, when I get out of bed, I'll go outside for a 30-minute walk is a good example of how to habit stack. He points out that vague goals like I'll exercise more don't work. Instead, you say, when I get out of bed, I will exercise because I want to feel more healthy. He says to say what behavior, when, and in what location. The more specific, the better. He also says, to help cement a habit, train yourself to link it to a particular context or place. For example, if you usually study at your desk, don't scroll on your phone while sitting there. Your brain loves routine, and if you sit at your desk and study and not waste time, you will soon get used to that space as your study space. If you choose to scroll there, it will soon be a scrolling place in your mind. So, if you're going to set appointments at your desk, then do so without doing other things. Keep your spaces clear of other more tempting distractions. He also says, if a new habit feels boring or hard, make it more attractive by pairing it with something you enjoy. This is called temptation bundling. I do this when I walk in the evening. I put in my favorite podcast, and I'm usually only halfway through, so I'm more apt to walk because I want to return to my podcast. This gives your brain something to look forward to while you build consistency in your habit. Next, the author says, reduce any friction. Keep your energy on what you've decided to do. For example, sleep in your workout clothes. If finding your clothes and deciding which clothes to wear creates friction or slows you down in the morning, whatever thing you have to do to keep your goals, do it. Remember, we tend to repeat behaviors that feel good and avoid the ones that don't. So if you want a habit to stick, make it satisfying. Now, the author of Atomic Habits, James Clear, was struck in the face by a baseball bat during baseball practice. The bat smashed into his skull, shattering bones, causing brain swelling, and nearly killing him. He was airlifted to the hospital, placed in a medically induced coma, and spent weeks in recovery. He had to relearn even simple tasks like walking in a straight line and concentrating on reading. His dream of playing professional baseball was shattered. And when he finally returned to school, he wasn't the same student or athlete, and he described that time as feeling like my identity had been erased. But that injury became the catalyst for a new way of living. He decided that instead of chasing big dramatic goals, he would focus on tiny daily improvements. They required less energy. He couldn't control everything, but he could control his routine. So he started to make his bed every morning, stick to a regular sleep schedule, never miss a workout, lay out his clothes the night before, study for just 10 minutes, then build up to 15, then 20, then 30, then an hour, then two. These small habits didn't look impressive day to day, but over time, they built structure, confidence, and momentum. And he said, I realized that habits are the compound interest of self-improvement. By his senior year, he had become team captain and was named to the ESPN All-America team, one of the highest academic honors for student athletes. He didn't achieve that through one big change, but through hundreds of small, consistent ones. Well, after college, he applied the same principles to his professional life. He began writing about behavior change and habit formation on his blog, posting twice a week, without missing a single deadline for years. That consistency grew his readership from zero to hundreds of thousands. In 2018, he published Atomic Habits, which became one of the most influential books on personal development in modern history. Its core message is, you don't rise to the level of your goals, you fall to the level of your systems. The point is, where does your energy go? Well, perhaps you and I could point that energy to establishing habits that in the future would use very little of our energy if we could stick to those habits. Recently, I saw a documentary about Alan Ashton and the start and success of WordPerfect. Now, if you're in my generation, you likely used WordPerfect instead of Microsoft Word. It became the largest word processing software in the world, and Alan was the genius behind the company and product. I now work for Alan in our foundation. At the start of WordPerfect, Alan said he made it a matter of prayer as to whether he should invest his time and energy into creating this new company. He felt impressed that he should. That doesn't mean he felt impressed that he would be successful. It may have failed, but he felt God nudging him to do it. So, with faith, faith in God, faith in himself, faith in his team, he leapt forward and created something quite amazing. But he didn't need to spend any energy second-guessing or wondering what if. He felt an impression, he gave himself fully to that impression, and leapt forward into an uncertain future to see it come to pass. Faith allows you to spend your energy in the right place. Now, in her book about how to stop doubting your greatness and start living, author Jen Sincero said that we have a battle between our conscious and subconscious mind. Sometimes your conscious mind wants something. For example, let's say you read a book and it gives you the idea of wanting to travel the world. But your subconscious mind believes that traveling the world, while fun, is also irresponsible. It means your subconscious mind wins, and your actions will align with what your subconscious believes, not what your conscious mind wants. That's why you have to program your subconscious mind to align with what you want, or your actions are always going to stick with what your implicit thoughts are. This is what Alan Ashton did. He used faith to align everything inside him with his goal. Jen Sincero says you can also do this through affirmations. She says you must say them in your mind thousands of times. Perhaps your affirmation is, "I can do this." For years, I used an affirmation that said, "In this season of my life, God has told me that I'm to do a certain thing, and I will take advantage of this season, long or short, to do all I can to reach my goal." Here's the point. Doubt is resistance and requires energy. Faith is surrender and allows you to put your energy in the right place. Now, there's another principle at work here. Sincero wrote, "Indecision is one of the most popular tricks for staying stuck within the boundaries of what's safe and familiar. I've learned that I grow most, my potential increases most, when I am uncomfortable. Potential grows in discomfort, and your potential begins one step out of your comfort zone. As Joseph Campbell once said, the cave you fear to enter holds the treasure you seek." So, once you've set your course, don't waste energy on wondering if it was the right course. Have faith that the business you started was inspired, and spend your energy making that business work. Next, for most of us, what takes our energy is people. Now, people also give you energy, but if you were to have an energy meter of your mental and emotional energy, you'd likely see that energy is consumed in relationships with people. And there are a few things we can do to succeed with people in a way that allows us to use less energy. The first is something I learned the hard way, and maybe the easy way. And once I learned this lesson, I saw my energy usage go down. Here it is. Let other people win. Let the credit go to someone else. It takes no energy. Give away a genuine compliment to someone else. It requires no energy. Let them have the opinion. Encourage them. Remain positive. It takes no energy. These things will turn to your good and return energy to you. And what I've learned is the things that seem important in the moment sometimes dramatically decrease in importance the more time passes since the moment. At work, I've learned to let things simmer. I don't have to make a decision too quickly. Time has a way of doing our work for us. For example, I had an older teenage child who said, "I'm not going to college." Inside, my reaction was, "The heck you're not. You're going to whether you like it or not." But instead of making it a major production at the time and using all sorts of energy and emotional currency in the moment, I listened and nodded without reaction. Time has a way of just doing your work for you. The same child would go to college, get a master's degree, and benefit greatly from their education. It didn't need my energy at the time. With people, the next lesson I've learned is to own your mistakes with grace. Admit them quickly, genuinely, and you'll find that it takes little energy to move past your mistakes when you own them. Before becoming the president of Cinnabon, Kat Cole started as a 17-year-old waitress at a popular chain restaurant in Jacksonville, Florida. She was bright and ambitious and a hard worker. But early in her career, one moment of owning her mistakes changed everything. When Kat was 19, corporate called her manager in a panic. A new restaurant was opening in Australia, and several key employees had backed out of traveling to help launch it. Her manager turned to Kat and said, "Can you go?" She said, "Yes," immediately, even though she had never been outside the U.S., didn't have a passport, and had never trained staff before. Once in Sydney, she was tasked with running kitchen operations, training new employees, and managing a team that didn't know her. She quickly realized she was completely unprepared. Well, mistakes piled up. She gave the wrong food cost instructions, miscommunicated about inventory, and accidentally offended one of the local managers by overruling him on a staffing decision. Within a few days, the new restaurant was behind schedule and morale was dropping. Instead of hiding the problem or blaming others, Kat called her supervisor back in the U.S. and said, "I've made mistakes. I thought I knew how to lead a team, but I don't. At least not like this. I need to learn how to do this right." She didn't sugarcoat it or shift the blame. She admitted exactly where she'd failed and asked for help. Her supervisor flew out to Australia, coached her through the recovery, and told her afterward, "You just did what most people never do. You admitted it before we had to find out." The act of ownership not only salvaged the restaurant opening, it launched her leadership career. Because she handled the failure with humility, she was invited to help open more locations, then asked to train managers, then to oversee new market launches around the world. By age 26, she was a vice president, overseeing operations in 40 countries, despite never finishing college. Later, she was recruited to Cinnabon, where she led a brand turnaround that doubled its revenue in 4 years. By admitting her mistake quickly and honestly, she could use her energy in learning how to run the restaurant and not worry about whether her mistakes would be discovered. This applies to working with yourself as well as other people. The sooner you're honest with yourself, the sooner you can spend energy on what's most important. Now, we haven't talked about how to bring energy to yourself. This, just like charging your electric car, is essential. Creating this energy is a learned skill. And people that have learned it can travel further, faster in life. You know, too many books have been written about slowing down and reducing your work week and relaxing as a means to create energy. I disagree. While it has its place, I've learned that sometimes the opposite is true. What would you say if you were doing a podcast on the topic of bringing mental and emotional energy to your life? What would your podcast topics be? Well, here's mine. Seek progress, not perfection. Perfectionism traps people in a cycle of worry, self-criticism, and delay. But progress, even small, messy progress, has the opposite effect. It creates momentum. Research from Harvard Business School's Progress Principles study revealed that people's best work days weren't the ones with big wins, but the days when they made visible progress on meaningful tasks. Progress signals growth, and growth gives emotional energy. This practice creates a rhythm of achievement that the brain learns to crave. Even small wins generate a pulse of pride and energy. And the secret's not in doing more, but in noticing what you did mattered. Next, surround yourself with energizers, not drainers. Energy is contagious. Emotional and social psychology research shows that the people we interact with most profoundly shape our emotional energy. Researchers at the University of California, San Diego, found that happiness spreads through social networks in the same way contagions do. One happy person increases the odds of others feeling happier by nearly 25%. But the opposite is also true. People who chronically complain, gossip, or dwell on negativity can quietly drain energy. So ask yourself, who makes me feel more alive after a conversation? Who leaves me exhausted or self-doubting? Then spend more time with the former and less with the latter. This doesn't mean surrounding yourself with blind positivity. It means seeking people who challenge, inspire, and genuinely care. A small group of energizers can lift your cognitive and emotional energy exponentially. Energy shared is energy multiplied. Next, connect to meaning and future impact. Mental energy is not just about stimulation, it's about direction. You can have a busy, active life and still feel drained if none of it feels purposeful. Emotional energy thrives when actions align with meaning, when you know why you're doing something. Psychologist Viktor Frankl, who survived Nazi concentration camps, observed that people who endured extreme suffering and kept hope alive all shared one trait. They had something or someone they were living for. He called it logotherapy, the idea that humans are motivated by meaning more than pleasure or power. You don't need a grand mission to feel this. It can come from simple purposes like helping a team member, building something that outlasts you, learning so you can teach others. Meaning gives emotional energy because it ties effort to significance. When you connect what you do today to something that matters tomorrow, you replace fatigue with drive. You stop asking, how long will this take? And start asking, how much of a difference can this make? For many of you who are building a business, you can spend a lot of wasted energy worrying about how long it will take. And I've seen many successful business leaders turn to how much of a difference I can make as their primary concern, and the time ends up taking care of itself. Next, create energy rituals. Just as athletes have pregame rituals to summon focus, you can build energy rituals, repeatable, simple actions that prime your brain for vitality. These are not about relaxation, they are about ignition. For example, listening to a specific playlist before working out or meeting, writing one line each morning about what you're excited about, standing tall, shoulders back, and talking to yourself about why you matter. For most of you, just reviewing your successes will give you a list of these truths like you're smart, you're resilient, you're a problem solver, you have courage, you're strong, you're adaptable. And these truths can fill you with energy. And last, I found that the richest source of energy is hidden in your connection to God. He is the source of energy, like that given to Alan Ashton, can give you faith and energy to move forward in your business and life, even when things are not perfectly clear. And watch. You'll find that your energy will start to go towards your future, your family, and your life in higher and more productive ways. And you'll see that you are more capable and stronger than you ever thought before. Most of all, thanks for being here today. And don't forget to share this podcast with a friend and join us next week for another podcast as we learn to open our eyes to who and what we can become.